is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another look at the fire situation, really the fire season, as things seem to be quieting down a little bit. Probably should knock on wood with that. Pat Scripp is in, the district manager for the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Well, it's probably been a busy time for you.
Yes, Kyle, it has been a busy season.
You know, I wanted to kind of just sort of take folks through the last couple of months or so. Fire season started June 15th. We were way behind on rain. Kind of take it from there.
Yeah, so we went into the season with about a 12-inch deficit in annual rainfall. The season we knew was going to be different, just dealing with COVID mitigation, potting our engine crews, separating our workforce, just in case. And we really, really went into the season thinking about keeping fire off the landscape, going a little more aggressive on all of our initial attacks. And it played out very well throughout the year until September.
Well, in July, really just a couple of significant fires.
Yeah, so we started, we had a fire outside of Days Creek, 25 acres in operation with Fell and Buck, always difficult when you're dealing with those type of fuels. We took that out of play. We had aggressive aviation component to that fire as well. And then shortly after that, on the 23rd, we had another one out in the Rice Creek area. We had several others that were in that 15 to 20 acre range. Again, we took a heavy component of aviation with us to all those fires. We caught some breaks with slope reversal, and we had the resources there to get around it in a timely manner.
So at that point, it seemed like, gosh, this is going to be a quiet fire season.
Yeah, so, you know, we were really kind of getting, I wouldn't say complacent, but we were thinking we were in that fourth quarter, managing the clock, going to stay strong through the end, and then came September 7th and the weekend there. We knew the fuels were prime for a difficult fire season, and we actually had imposed an industrial fire level 4, which we closed the industrial operations throughout our jurisdiction in logging. And then on the 7th, about late 11 o'clock, we got our first reported fire. The forecast was for strong offshore flow, east winds. They were already putting it out there that it was once-in-a-lifetime event. And we had a fire reported outside just west of Glide in the French Creek area. We were able and successful to keep that under control, about 490 acres. And then on the 8th, we about 3 in the morning, we knew there was fire up near the old Williams Creek fire scar up near Steamboat on the National Forest. And then one popped up about 9 o'clock in the morning on Star Mountain Lane. And we engaged on that with resources from the French Creek. Within minutes, that fire went from 0 to 60, strong winds, bent column, spotting, aviation resources, and heavy equipment. We just couldn't contain it.
So let's go back to the French Creek fire for a minute. For a lot of people, they didn't know about that until the next morning, unless, of course, they lived right around Glide. And that morning, when I walked in, I could notice a lot of activity on the scanner, which is very unusual at 3 in the morning. And as I pulled open my email, I saw that Glide Schools was closed due to smoke, and I honestly thought that was a misprint. Somebody was testing out, you know, the computer system, somebody knew, whatever, and looked at their website, saw that they were closed due to smoke, and shot the superintendent, Mike Narkowitz, a quick email. He actually called back, and when you get to superintendents returning your phone calls at 3 in the morning, you realize that it's an intense situation. And he sent me a couple pictures that he had taken in the previous hour from right by the elementary school, just the other side of the river from where this fire was going.
Yeah, so we had strong winds. Crews that initial attack, that they said you know, they were losing their hard hats from gust of wind, you know, 30 miles an hour on the ridges. We're able to utilize some old containment lines from years past pasture burning. And it's lighter fuels, but, you know, light fuels move even faster than in the timber stand. So our guys fell out a couple ridges, were able to do some backfiring and contain that with a large component of volunteers from GLIDE, the rural department, as well as just general militia from the community helped that early morning.
I've talked to a couple of GLIDE residents who live not far from the high school, and they describe what they woke up to, because at that point for them, as the way they explained it, it was a combination of this French Creek fire, looking over there and seeing that, but then also looking to the east and seeing, though it was quite a ways away, you could see that something big was underway up the North Umpqua.
Yeah, so through the early morning hours, what became known as the Archie Creek fire had established itself into the old Williams Creek fire scar and was burning quite intensely, you know, under those east wind events.
And I understand, well, Kyle Reed said he had never seen or felt wind like that up there during fire season.
You know, yeah, so it was just an intense offshore flow. It gets channeled in the North Umpqua in sort of a Venturi effect, and so it accelerates it. You know, the spotting was miles ahead of the main fire.
Wow. And that's just ominous to think about how fast that was moving.
Yeah, so, you know, probably within a 36-hour period from the time they started, we burned over 100,000 acres, more than we have done in the last 20 years. And it occurred so fast. To put it into perspective how large the Archie Creek fire is, within its footprint, you could place the fire scars of Stouts Creek, the Douglas Complex, Horse Prairie, Milepost 97, Bland Mountain Number 2, and Cable Crossing, all within that fire perimeter.
Wow. And yet, even still, we've got one fire in Oregon that topped 200,000 acres. I think I saw a report from the state the other day that was the biggest fire in 100 years.
Yeah, definitely this is a historical event. It'll be with us for generations. You know, this is probably equivalent to the fires of 1910, just the size, scope, and scale that the West had dealt with during this time period.
Wow, so it moves along very quick. Talk about just what those first few hours are like dealing with Archie Creek in terms of trying to manage personnel and equipment and realizing that this is about as much of a crisis as you can get.
You know, a big shout out and kudos to all those who were in there engaged on initial attack, knocking on doors, getting people out of the way of it moving forward, coordinating with the Douglas County Sheriff's Department and the commissioners on evacuations. You know, I remember the call when they asked about evacuating down to Idlewild, and I said, just go all the way in to GLIDE, turn the corner, and evacuate Little River as well. The way this was moving, you know, the potential was there to push all the way through GLIDE. And our crews, along with the rural fire department, you know, they're attributed to saving dozens of homes, just spot source protection, and moving along as it pushed them out.
Have you ever experienced anything close to this in your career?
You know, I was at ground zero on Stouts Creek, where it was 107 degrees, and probability of ignition was 99%, and it was a plume-dominated fire versus this was a wind-driven. I've seen a couple of these in my 37-year career, but nothing to this magnitude that it moved this fast through heavy timber, across slope reversals. It had a clear, definite direction to the northeast or northwest. If this would have started a few hours earlier, just like they did in Holiday Farm, I'm pretty confident that this would have been not only through GLIDE, but all the way pushing through Sutherland and all the way to Oakland.
Wow. Pretty ominous situation. We're going to talk more about the Archie Creek fire and the related fires with Pat Scripp, District Manager of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson coming at 1. CBS Audio America changed forever this afternoon at 4. We'll talk to a representative of ADAPT about something new they're working on Mondays inside Douglas County. Pat Scripp is the district manager for the Douglas Forest Protective Association. You mentioned it before, there are so many different components because you're dealing with federal land with different agencies, state land, private land, of course, tracts of timber with a lot of our local companies involved. And one of the things I've heard from various people time and time again in the last few weeks is just how not just the people that are on the clock, if you will, but people were coming, this is a bad pun, but people were coming out of the woodwork really to just help and do what they could.
Yeah, so, you know, once the fire crosses jurisdictional boundaries, it becomes pretty complex because we have, this one involved the Bureau of Land Management that managed the ONC lands, the U.S. Forest Service, and then our jurisdiction. But in that footprint, there's private industrial ground, there's county, there's state highway. So all these people come to play into under the team and add value to coordinate their efforts. You know, we have Pacific Power as well. We're holding daily 10 o'clock meetings. We had liaisons that help us make all those touches. But we're blessed, you know, to have the commissioners we do and the county government be involved as much as they were in this fire. From the Sheriff's Department to Public Works, their efforts were instrumental in helping us succeed in this.
And there was also, because of all the fires in California that had begun earlier, there was kind of a shortage of people.
Yeah, so when the fires touched off up north of us early in the morning, plus the fires in California, there was a critical shortage of resources, right down to an incident management team. Usually we hit the easy button, get a state Department of Forestry incident management team. This time we ended up ordering a federal team as a joint decision between the federal partners and DFPA. But our firefighting resources really came from timber industry and the landowners. We spent a lot of time with the training, but they spent a lot of time and money building a fire program to support us. At one point, I think we had over 400 pieces of equipment and personnel from timber industry engaged on this. They were the primary workforce in corralling the Archie Creek fire.
Wow. And you had National Guard, too.
We did. Operation Smokey in the state of Oregon. They put those into play. We ended up with four crews, about 125 people. They were housed at the Job Corps Center. Again, one of our challenges through this fire was to maintain the COVID mitigation and separate and pod people. And so we brought those into play for a short time until organized fire crews could be brought to bear on this.
And that was one of the interesting components, because normally when I've gone out to fires up the North Umpqua, you go past, you've got the giant sometimes fire camp out at the Strader property, and everything had to be done differently this year, and as if you need more things thrown at you, more curveballs when you're dealing with a huge fire.
Yeah, so our incident command post, the teams were at the Douglas County Fairgrounds, commissioners and had canceled events so they could utilize that space. And then we had a base camp in Glide. We also had spike camps up at Eagle Rock and Gassy Creek east of Sutherland, and then the Job Corps. And we were doing remote briefings, whether it was on radio or broadcasted through a PA system dial-in phone. So we got the information, the weather, and assignments to the folks each day. And meals came out of Glide and were distributed all through that to those camps. I think a quote of back in Desert Storm, they asked Schwarzkopf how far he'd go. He said, "I would go as far as my logistics would take me." And that's really where it played a difficult for us in this fire.
For people that were out on the front lines, I mean, were people working almost 24 hours a day at points?
Yeah, we tried to maintain a night shift best we could with limited resources. It's hard to work some of that heavy equipment at night in tough terrain, but we would put into play some night shift to make the day shift successful, and there was always somebody out there monitoring the progress. One I haven't mentioned is the rural fire departments and that came together and moved resources in to protect structures. Amazing. They were on their own for several days before a conflagration was declared, and the state fire marshal's office came into play for a short time there, too.
So there's so many things. We're going to be so in so many phases of this for a very, very long time. And of course, quickly, about as quickly as some of the people were moving in to try to help with the fire, you had the folks with Glide Strong and Glide Revitalization and groups like that.
Yeah, and Red Cross. They co-located at the Douglas County Fairgrounds for a time. Again, I feel very blessed that our county government is providing those points of contact and resources for those that were displaced. We lost 109 homes on this fire, and my heart goes out, you know, both empathy and sympathy to those that have the loss. The DFPA, we actually lost a guard station at Rock Creek and the Mount Scott Lookout Tower as well.
Right, and you probably had staff who lost homes.
Well, yes, we had a couple staff that were displaced from this and their extended families. So it's touched home.
Wow. So you mentioned the long-term impacts of this, and that's what I've heard from people like yourself, people in, from the sheriff's office and others about, you know, yeah, it'll green up, you know, neck after the rains and some of that, but this is going to be a decades-long fix, it sounds like.
It is. You know, these fire scars are with us. There's a shared risk in these fire scars for 40-plus years. We're seeing the private landowners already get engaged in doing what some people call salvage, or post-salvage. I call it pre-fire treatment because we know there'll be other fires on the landscape, as well as, you know, they were ordering seedlings the day this was burning just to get ahead of the power curve. But, you know, there's years and years of work that they're going to get done in about 18 months just to recover some of their losses out there.
And Sam Carter from Pacific Power was in here this morning talking about the work they've been able to get done so far and the availability for people that maybe go back to their properties in campers, RVs, et cetera, and, you know, working with them to get at least some limited power so they can get some things done.
Yeah, the network of talking to Sam and others, they're putting the drops in at each foundation, so folks who are going to return to the area have some options moving forward for maybe a temporary power source. But they were quick to start assessing their losses and replacing the infrastructure they need to get service back.
So year to date for DFPA, of course, this fire changed everything, but where are things looking like right now?
You know, of the, we're at 78 fires for the year, for a little over 107,000 acres burned in our jurisdiction. That is down from the average, but we went a long periods without lightning, and that, you know, brings up the numbers. So we've also done about 456 different responses. Those are, whether they're law enforcement, you know, someone burned without a permit or burned debris or violation of regulated use. Our dispatch center's been just hopping since mid-June on dispatches and tracking folks.
Wow. Got less than a minute left. So we've got this rain coming in. Is this going to be enough, or what do you think?
Well, you know, you never count the chickens until everything's hatched. But we're watching the rain, optimistic. They've dialed back a little bit of the forecast. We're going to see how much we get over the weekend, probably lessen down to a low and decrease our fire precaution level for industry as well. But we want to see what the reaction is on the fuels. And so Monday we'll be making a decision and taking in the long-term forecast if we stay in season or if it's enough to get us to declare season over.
And even, I think this morning, maybe yesterday, somebody out, a random debris burn?
Yeah, our starts are down, but our responses to unregulated burning. Right now no burning is allowed in the district. If that changes, we'll be putting it out in the media, and permits will be required if we make that change.
All right. Wow, what a summer.
Yes. I'm. Every year they keep telling me this is once in a lifetime. Well, after 37 years, I've lived about 10 lifetimes.
Patrick Scripp, District Manager of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.